Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kabikian.
And good morning. My name is Phil Vacchio.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Dave.
Phil and I are two of the attorneys from the Herzog Law Firm, and some combo of us is here every single weekend talking to you about estate planning and elder law. It's a lot more fun than I think people think, Phil, when they hear we have a radio program.
I love it.
It is. It's, you know, I like to think we're like Car Talk, even though Car Talk was far better. you know, Car Talk, right, John?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, sure.
We can strive to get there one day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, topical. And I also think there's sometimes humor and real life and stuff like that.
I tend to agree with you.
Yeah.
It's a call-in show, and you can reach us at 518-476-5900 with any questions you may have. Or you can come to one of our three offices in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and down in Kingston by reaching us in the office at 518-465-7581. Phil.
Yes.
We're concluding Father's Day week.
Is it a whole week long?
Well, that's what I think it should be.
I don't know. I haven't been celebrated yet. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you texted me and said, "Well, we got to talk about Father's Day."
Well, we got to give a shout out to all the fathers out there.
Sure. Happy Father's Day, Phil.
At the very least, Happy Father's Day, Dave.
Right. Happy Father's Day, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
All of us fathers, grandpas. You know, hey, it's our day tomorrow.
Yeah, we get one day a year. I mean, we should enjoy it.
At least one.
I don't know what it means to enjoy it, really, but.
Yeah, but I think there's always a fine line between I want to do all the things I like to do because it's Father's Day, and I want to spend every moment with my family because it's Father's Day.
Yeah. Do you ever have the
and ideally it's both?
Try to do your father a favor, like mow the lawn on Father's Day when you were a kid, and he'll come out and say you're doing it wrong.
Oh, yeah. I never did anything right, according to my dad. That's how I want. I spoke with my brother yesterday, and I was like, "What are you doing for Father's Day?"
Yeah, then he just finishes it. But you know, it's the effort.
That's what they do. But I thought my brother said he's going to be mowing his lawn on his ride-on with a few beers to his side.
Well, okay.
That's his happiness for Father's Day.
It's a zen.
Yeah. It's a zen place. Yeah, everyone has a different zen.
Well, you had a little bit of an estate planning angle as well.
Yeah. You know, so I mean, a personal note for a segment for my father, just to relate there. He was an Italian immigrant. He came here to, you know, follow the American dream like many did.
Yeah.
His dad came before him a year or two to start that American dream. But he started working when he was 18, 19, you know, like full time.
Sure.
I mean, John, I'm one of nine kids. Yeah. I have a huge family.
One of nine. Huge no kidding. Family. Wow.
So he was never able to stop working after having that first kid
to pay
for that many kids. But,
sure, yeah.
You know, a lot of that generation and still a generation, they worked hard. They made a lot of sacrifices to provide and earn for their family.
Yep.
And then they start getting older, and we see this all the time, Dave. You know, they saved their whole lives and were frugal about spending, and now they're concerned about protecting it.
Yeah.
Right.
Because realistically, to work that hard your whole life, you know, 7 days a week sometimes, and make those sacrifices to your family, to then have all the assets you earned go to pay for a nursing home or go back to the government to reimburse Medicaid is a pretty depressing thought. In my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is regardless of whether you have kids or not, by the way, regardless of whether you're a dad, because a lot of times the clients have a sentiment of, well, I worked hard, so I want my money to go where I want my money to go. I want it to be all of it.
Of course. That's across the board. But I feel like when you have kids in particular, it's even more of an impetus. Like I want to pass it to my next generation.
That and if the goal is that your kids have grow off of what you accomplished, right? Yeah. So they don't have to struggle to, you know, my struggles are nothing compared. Your struggles, Phil, are nothing compared to your dad's struggles.
When you put it in perspective, right? Yeah.
It's absurd.
You can't even.
And then, you know, I remember stories from my grandfather. It's like, oh man, he was selling pillows as an 8-year-old. Like, okay, I cannot compete with that.
Yeah. No.
I'm upset because my Nintendo didn't start.
Certainly different
when
times.
I was eight, you know.
First, we call them first world problems, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that. So all the fathers out there that worked their whole lives, you know.
Yeah.
Kudos to you.
Yeah.
But indeed.
Protect those assets.
Well, so let's uncover it more, Phil. So when you talk about protecting, what do you mean? Get more into it.
Well, you know, you start to get a little bit older. You get to your retirement, quote-unquote retirement age, which is different for everybody nowadays. I have clients that work till they're in their 80s, some that retire in their 60s. But I would say, generally speaking, 60 to 70 is what we see. Somewhere in that range is when you get close to retirement age and start to think about, well, what happens now beyond, and when I get older. And I saw my own parents get sick, or I saw a family member get sick. I don't want that to happen to my family, where we have to spend all their assets. So we'll sit down and have that discussion and learn about those goals and wishes and needs. And a lot of times what we end up talking about is some kind of planning to protect those assets if I get sick. If I need nursing home care, if I need care in the house, all that is extremely expensive. And a lot of people don't realize there are ways. You know, I can qualify for what we call Medicaid, even if you're not destitute. You don't have to be destitute. That's a common misconception.
You could be a millionaire.
Absolutely. And people don't realize that, unfortunately. But those that we meet with and those that hear from somewhere come in, and we plan ahead. A lot of times we're creating some form of a trust. We call them Medicaid Asset Protection Trusts. And we fund those trusts with certain assets to protect them if they get sick in the future. You know, and that's a very high level general overview of that type of plan. But for many people.
So, Phil, when people say, okay, that's great, I already did that because I have a will. It's like, well, no, it's a different kind of plan. It's a little more advanced.
Yeah.
We're talking about avoiding going through court when we die. That's probate, and starting there and then doing it in a way where if it turns out we have those long-term care needs, we're good. Or at least we can choose whether we're going to use our own money or not. A lot of people think when you do a Medicaid trust, somehow you're signing up for Medicaid and you're signing up for the worst nursing home and a nursing home at all.
Yeah.
When in fact you're just signing up to preserve your money, and then you decide if you want to unpreserve it for whatever it is you want to spend money on.
Or it's like a taboo, like if I do this planning, that is what's going to happen. And you know, we have to dispel those taboos and those suspicions and be practical about it. You know, there's not many negatives to that kind of planning. It's scary to a lot of people because, you know, terms like irrevocable. And people hear stories of you're giving up total control and this and that.
Which you're not.
You're not.
By the way, you're not.
Exactly. There's a lot of misconceptions around that. So, you know, sitting down with a professional to discuss what that planning really means can sometimes enlighten people and say, oh, I didn't realize that. That's not what I heard at all. And it makes a lot more sense.
I want to do an extra kudos. You mentioned the fathers, like your father.
Yeah.
There are also fathers out there, Phil, who helped raise kids, and now they are caregivers for their spouse.
Yeah.
And that's as many gold stars as you possibly can give to someone, because, you know, when mom is taking care of dad, it's almost like it's a little more expected, or it's almost like there's a skill set that a lot of our mothers have.
Yeah, that maternal instinct, if you will,
caregiving.
Right?
Even though it's incredibly difficult, it's almost like it's something else when you see, especially a client that comes in and it's husband, and he's in rough shape because he's taking care of his wife and doing some things he never thought he would be doing.
And you don't hear about that too much.
I don't want to say it doesn't come natural to them, but it just is as expected from society.
Yeah.
It's almost like it makes the bad and sad fact pattern worse. But those fathers out there, are doing a heck of a job.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
But, you know, there's an expression that, you know, pressure makes diamonds. You know, how do you make a diamond? Pressure and time. Pressure also makes rubble. You know?
Yeah.
And so, in those situations in particular, when we have a spouse who's now a caregiver, whichever direction it goes into, we always talk about not being too proud to get help. So if we are out there and we are starting to be caregivers for spouses, even though you might be in your 80s or your late 70s or you never did this Medicaid trust, it's actually never too late to have these discussions. And as a spouse, Phil, there's a lot of exemptions and even more eligibility opportunities when there's a spouse.
And it's never too late, like you said, but it's always better to start planning early. The earlier you start planning, the more options you're going to give yourself, because you don't want to plan in crisis mode. We say that all the time, because your options are much more limited. you are incredibly stressed, and maybe you're getting yourself sick at that time too. I mean, caregiver burnout and also caregiver death and sickness, those are real mm-hmm. things. If yeah. you look at those stats, yeah. there are a lot of caregivers who die before the person they're caring for. Because yeah. stress kills, right? Doctors tell you that. Stress will kill you if you don't manage it, you yeah. know, if you let it take over your entire life. So, you know, if you are a caregiver, know that there are options out there to get you help and at least assist. And if nothing else, make that care and the money you have to provide for that care go longer, right? Because yeah. we can get that supplemented in ways.
Keep your money, right?
Keep your money. Get the yeah. government pay. We pay a lot of money to the government over our lifetimes. I think it's, you know, okay to help them pay for some stuff when we get older.
Yeah, it's an entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're entitled to it.
And take advantage of it. It's an option. Take advantage of it.
So, Phil, I have three absolutely random topics for you. I don't know which ones you want to do or not do. So I'm just going to say them out loud.
I'll
and then
pick.
You just
yeah.
you pick.
You tell
okay?
me.
And, John, if you feel very strongly, you jump in here, okay?
Right.
So here are the topics. Multiple people inheriting a house. What can go wrong? Topic number one. Topic number two, second relationship planning. I had a run of that this week. And then lastly, the importance of a pooled income trust.
Ooh, those are all good.
Those are good topics. You know what? I had a lot of clients with the second relationships this week.
Shall we?
Yeah, let's yeah. talk about that a little bit okay. and what we saw this week and some issues that come up sometimes.
So let me kind of set up for the audience, Phil, a couple of the challenges that go into it, because it seems like, well, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
when no. you have kids coming into a relationship and she has kids coming into a relationship,
yep.
even if you've been together forever and ever and, yep. and you know what, your kids all grew up together and your kids are my kids and that's how we
right.
feel.
They get along. Mm-hmm.
Legally, that. Her kids are her kids, your kids are your kids, number one. So we got to be careful with the lingo we use when we draft documents, because we can't just say all the kids, because kids is actually...
Those are legal terms.
Yeah.
Term of art, right? It means a certain
okay.
thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, we may want to take care of each other for the rest of each other's lives, but we also want to make sure that our kids get their fair share, whatever you've determined.
Right.
And even in a scenario where you and second partner agree... everything for each other, and then everything split amongst all of the children, mm-hmm. your children and my children.
Right.
The problem is we can't guarantee that
yeah.
because whoever survives between the two spouses
right.
can always change their plan. One of the yeah. hallmarks of everything yeah. we do is we want our clients to be able to amend their plan.
Right.
Yeah. We don't know right. what the future holds, so we want to be able to pivot and change that plan, of course.
Right. So with 2 minutes before the break, Phil.
2 minutes.
We'll have to go over the break afterwards
right.
with this.
Yeah.
So what I like to do is I like to do wills whenever I can. Whenever it's a young family
sure.
and it's this kind of scenario, I don't want to get into trusts unnecessarily. The trusts I want to do end up being those Medicaid trusts when they're a little older. But if there's ever a time where I'm doing revocable trusts,
yeah.
it's actually this kind of fact pattern. And it's not about the money. It's to make sure that what she had or he had does, in fact, go at least to their kids.
Yeah, that's one of the most common situations, I agree, where we will do a revocable trust to meet that goal. Because like you said, you have two competing interests a lot of times. You want to provide for your now spouse, but at the same time, you want to provide for your kids, your biological or adopted kids as well. And the fear of, I leave everything to my spouse to provide for him or her, understanding what you said, they can change that.
And it's not like they're going to double cross. It might be your kids are being real big jerks.
Yeah, well, they
you
could
know?
Be
you
undue
have,
influence
no
as you it's get older.
It's been known
you
to
could
happen,
be,
right?
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, people get manipulated sometimes when they're
yeah,
older, too,
yeah.
to change things. If you trust your spouse, but someone they meet somebody else, and that somebody else convinces them to change that plan, that's a real
Or their biological father...
Yeah.
Is chirping in their ear, you know, or
yeah.
or they don't want to yeah. wait to get an inheritance for another 20 years. Their
right.
mom just died. They want the money now.
Yep.
And
yeah.
you just
yeah.
never know. And what ends up being really important always for Phil and Jim Ray and myself is the story has to end exactly how you wanted in terms of who gets your money.
Yeah.
And we can't do those, you know, what we call I love you wills, Phil, where it's I give everything to my spouse and everything to the kids. Those don't work in these second relationships anymore.
There's no guarantee that'll work.
Yeah.
Correct.
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Show right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. We're back. My name is Dave Kubikin.
And my name is Phil Vacchio.
Phil and I are just ending a wonderful Father's Day week here. I hear there's going to be a Father's Day month as well, Phil.
Yeah, it's been changed. Put the word out.
Word's been going out.
You get a whole month
for it.
Yeah, and why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. We were actually talking about a really interesting type of client, which is where the relationship, the marriage, there's spouses that come in, but they are second spouses. They maybe have grown kids from their prior relationships, maybe not so grown kids. And regardless, we start to get a little more into revocable trust, as Phil was mentioning, because it's a little more complicated. We want to guarantee that certain beneficiaries are going to get certain kinds of money. And Phil, when we do a revocable trust, it's actually two, one for wife, one for husband.
Right.
And maybe we're taking that house that they bought together or the house that she came into the relationship with. And we're going to deed it according to whatever they want, but we want to make sure each other has a life use. We don't want to kick dad out or stepdad out just if mom died.
Sure.
But we want to make sure the value of that property does stay in mom's column or stepdad's column, as the case may be.
Right. And the reason that you have to separate it from the get-go, the two separate trusts, is because if the assets are simply jointly owned or beneficiary-driven, that plan's not going to work. It's going to go to the surviving spouse automatically. So we separate it. Husband or spouse and spouse have their own assets or pieces of the assets now, and each of their pieces goes into their separate trust. So now we're creating two separate entities that own separate pieces of things.
It's just one plan. You're paying for one plan.
Yeah.
So I don't want anyone to think, oh, look at these Herzog guys raising the costs all over the place.
That's not the reason, we promise.
We do planning.
Yeah.
We help you with your plan. You tell us how the story ends, and we tell you how to get there.
Yeah, exactly. And oftentimes it's hard to achieve both those things, protecting both your kids and your spouse. But that is a great way to do it.
We do have a caller here.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, is that Mary Ellen I saw written down there?
Yeah, that's what I had. Yeah,
Mary Ellen, how are you? Good morning.
Hi, I'm wonderful. How are you guys?
Good. What's up? You sound like you're in the car.
I am. I'm on my way home from work.
Oh,
ooh.
Thank you for whatever you're doing.
I'm a nurse.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you. So I don't really own any property. I do have, I'm 64, I'll be 65 in January. I may go part-time and start collecting my retirement. But there's a lot of longevity in my family, so my concern is that someday I will be in a nursing home. So for my Medicaid estate planning, which I'm getting very serious about, do I need a trust if I don't own a property? Annuity that I'm planning on collecting?
It's a very good question. So don't hang up, okay? Just hang on for a second. So your question is a really important one, because a lot of people think if they don't own a home that they don't really need to engage in long-term care planning. And they're confusing a couple concepts, because a lot of times we say, when you own a home, I know we're going to one day go through this thing called probate. I'd like to avoid probate. And also, we have this very large asset we want to protect. However, the whole point of long-term care planning, if this is what you care about, is protecting your money so your money lasts as long as possible. It's not protecting your money only if you have a house. It's protecting your money. And specifically, we care about your non-qualified money, so no retirements. We're talking about CDs and those non-qualified annuities you may be buying, and your brokerage account and what have you. So if you feel you have value and you want to protect that value so it lasts you longer, so you can later on, as Phil was saying earlier in the half hour, choose to use your money to pay for your needs. Or if you want to, you know, just protect it to give it to nephews and nieces or great causes. Whatever makes you tick, Mary Ellen, the house isn't the determining factor as to whether or not you do a trust or not. It's whether or not we want to protect our money or not. When we have a house, it kind of puts it over the top because I don't need, Phil, a nursing home to make it a good idea for me to have done that trust. I know I'm going to die one day. I'd like to avoid probate, and I may have specific wishes as to where I want my money to go.
Yep.
So when there's a homeowner that's a client, Mary Ellen, it's a lot easier to talk trust because it already does things just by its pure existence.
You're achieving additional goals there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But if we want to protect our money, and again, we would want to talk about what kind of money are we talking about, because as Phil kind of mentioned earlier, retirement's exempt in the way that Medicaid looks at assets. So what I would encourage you to do is to come in and we talk about it. And you know, it's an hour with Phil or myself or Jay Marie, and I think it's an hour well spent.
Okay, I will have to make that appointment then. I am finalizing my healthcare proxy, my power of attorney, and my will, and I just didn't really know if I needed a trust.
So what I would do, though, is before you finalize those, try to have this conversation. It may be that you end the story with just those basic documents, but you know, inside baseball stuff, when we do a trust, we always redo your will anyway. So maybe save that bullet for a moment and have the conversation.
Okay, that's great. Thanks so much for your help.
No problem.
And that consultation is free, Dave. I don't think you mentioned that.
Yeah.
So to be scared of a
complimentary
charge. Yeah. Charge. Complimentary. Better word.
So Phil, what are your thoughts on Mary Ellen's question there?
Oh, that's a great question, but she's exactly right with her thought, because the most common type of asset we're putting into that trust happens to be real estate.
Yeah.
Because it's one of people that own real estate, it's one of the most significant assets. And also, we're achieving, like you said, that other goal of avoiding probate. Because if I have all non-real estate assets, if I don't own real estate, it's rather easy to avoid probate by simply naming beneficiaries.
Yeah, Mary Ellen's got some bank accounts, maybe an annuity. She could put beneficiaries on it.
Right.
But if her estate plan happens to be not just a person or people, but you know, leaving money a certain way, or creating a scholarship, or giving money to different causes, we may not be able to accomplish those goals just with a beneficiary and a percentage. It might be a little more
absolutely
in depth.
Yeah, if you want to both avoid probate and control disposition beyond death, then we're back into the trust domain.
Yeah.
But then to her point, too, with the protecting assets, if you don't own a house, it doesn't mean you don't have assets to protect.
Yeah.
There's assets of all different forms. And knowing what those assets are and how Medicaid treats those assets is a big part of the equation as to whether or not a trust may or may not make sense to you. Mary Ellen may be fine at the end of the day with the healthcare proxy, power of attorney, will, that basic estate plan, that foundation we say everyone needs. But there's a good chance after having a conversation with her and learning her situation and her goals and her
needs in particular, right?
In particular, that a trust may make sense. But like you said to her, it's a good idea to just have that conversation, and you're going to walk out of there feeling better about what your plan is and if it achieves your actual goals.
Either way, by the way, because the uncertainty will be gone at least.
Yeah, which is big. I mean, again, stress kills, right? Take one stressful thing off your plate there. Get your stuff in order.
A lot of times, Phil, when I'm talking about what goes into a trust and people want to say, well, can I sell my house? Can I not? I'm not sure how it works.
Oh, we had
to tell people.
Here?
Yeah. Well, no, not really.
Okay.
I mean, I just say you're always putting a pile of money into the trust. It's always a pile of money. Sometimes the pile of money looks like a house.
Yeah.
Sometimes it looks like a CD. Sometimes it looks like a vacation property, whatever, a collectible. Right. It's always value that you're putting in.
Yeah, there's a dollar amount associated with the asset, whatever that is, whatever that pile
and
is.
And that is what we're trying to protect. So, you know, if down the road, Mary Ellen did, she puts money into the trust and lo and behold, she does end up buying a small condo somewhere, let's say. Well, the value now is in the form of real estate.
Yeah.
That transaction going from money in a trust to a condo and money in a trust, that doesn't interfere with the look back periods at all.
Sure.
Right. It's a non-taxable transaction. There's no tax realization unless she sold stuff.
Yeah. People get a lot of fear around that. Oh, if I transfer these things, it's going to be a taxable event. And That's usually not when you transfer to the types of trust that we create are usually disregarded entities for IRS purposes. So it's not a taxable event. You don't have to be scared that, oh, I have this an investment account. I'm going to transfer it. It's going to be taxable when I transfer it. That's not the case. We can do a simple change of ownership to the trust and keep it in that form.
Phil, do we have 4 minutes?
Which one do you want?
Can we talk about multiple people inheriting a house and why it's a really awful idea?
Sure. lay the framework for me, Dave.
Sure. Mom has a will or a trust or whatever, leaves everything to her 5 kids.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say the property is going to be sold or split. It's going to be left to the 5 kids. Or you know what? She wanted to save some money. She did a life estate deed with a real estate attorney, leaving the house outright to the 5 kids. She deeded 5 kids, kept the life use. When she passes one day, I now have 5 owners of a piece of property. Those 5 owners are not married. Some of them may not like each other, even if they all love each other.
Yep.
5 owners. Sometimes one of the siblings has been living with mom. He doesn't feel like moving out anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. You wouldn't be walking around. I don't think any of us, right? If the 3 of us walked out of here into one of the neighborhoods over here, we would not be like, hey, I got a great idea. Let's the 3 of us buy a house in the 3 of our names.
Yeah, that's right.
Many pitfalls there.
Better yet, if it turns out I die one day after the 3 of us bought that house together, now you co-own a house with my estate.
Yeah.
Did I have a trust? I don't know. What did I do? Now, you didn't want to own a property with my kids and my wife, did you? I don't think so.
Right. That wasn't the plan.
So there's a, you know, when people talk about estate litigation, oh, I really want to avoid probate. I have a friend where it took years. Those instances where it takes years, I would bet that a large amount of them involve real estate where people are fighting over something.
Yeah, that happens all the time. I mean, you get 5 people in a room together. How often are they going to agree on the same thing? Not commonly. So the same thing when you leave a house to 5 people in that example, for them to all agree on what's going to happen to the house is, it may happen, but a lot of times there's disagreement about what is supposed to happen.
So what's the valuation to buy people out at, and how's that all going to work? How do I get the, I can't get the financing, but that used to be the house we grew up in, Phil. I don't want to sell it. You want to sell it?
Right. And now certain people are villainized. Certain people feel one way and the other. It's better to lay that framework and do the work ahead of time and take those questions out of the equation, which is
so it could be a provision that says upon my death, the house will be sold and the proceeds will be split, because that's probably what you meant.
Yeah.
When you wanted to leave everything to all 5 kids.
Yeah. And that's what the, you know, your executor, who the person in charge is, that's going to be their direction. They're going to follow those directions. And there's not much the other ones can say about that. I mean, obviously, if the kids come to an agreement that one or more are going to buy the other out, that can still happen.
Yeah.
Don't think that you say it's to be sold and split doesn't mean that they can't agree otherwise and one person can keep it or 2 people can keep it. That can still happen, but you're taking the potential conflict out of the equation by saying, if everyone doesn't agree, my executor can do just this. They don't need permission from the others.
I feel like whoever is listening to this part needs to listen to it twice.
Yeah.
Because it was a pretty quick 3 minutes for us. But we see it a lot, Phil, and it really messes things up.
And you can get very, very creative with this. I've done some trusts and wills where we get very detailed and specific, you know, an order of priority, who has the right to buy it, for what value, and creating those formulas about what the purchase price is going to be. We can get that specific if you would like.
Bang.
Perfect. Look at that. Bang on the dime.
Have a wonderful Father's Day, everyone.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.